VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And good afternoon. Welcome to Crosstalk on VCY America. It's a Friday News Roundup Day here today, and Sandy's been compiling a number of stories throughout the course of this week, a number of topics and issues. And friends, we're in a mess. We're in a mess, spiritually speaking, morally speaking, financially speaking, as it relates to security, just everywhere you look. And we have to recognize that our hope is not found in the White House. Our hope is found in Jesus Christ. And we must keep our eyes firmly upon him in times like these. And we're going to talk about some of the times that are going on right now. And certainly we trust it will burden our hearts for this world that's around us to recognize time is short. We are seeing the escalation of countries coming together, and something is just really afoot that is taking place. And as our friend Jimmy DeYoung would say, the stage is being set for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled. So we do so with our eyes open, understanding the times in which we live, and then go about being the salt and light that God has called us to be. We're going to begin with a story from Newsmax.com. Silicon Valley Bank's focus on woke economics rather than its core mission likely led to its collapse, but the myriad of federal regulations that are available should have helped prevent that from happening, said Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. He said, I mean, this bank, they're so concerned with DEI, that's diversity, equity, and inclusion, and politics and all kinds of stuff, I think that diverted them from focusing on their core mission. The bank lists DEI initiatives on its website as part of its overall policy, claiming that it's building a culture of belonging with a global workforce that creates greater dimensions of diversity and reflects the markets that we strive to serve. Its collapse marked the second largest bank to fall since 2008, with the collapse of Washington Mutual. Also, coming to us from CNN, they're reporting that in an extraordinary action to restore confidence in the banking system, the Biden administration last Sunday guaranteed that customers of the failed Silicon Valley Bank will have access to all their money starting this past Monday, of course. The government also shut down a Signature Bank, a regional bank that was teetering on the brink of collapse in recent days. Also, their money's guaranteed by depositors as well. They're saying, though, that U.S. taxpayers will not be on the hook for either facility, regulators said, but shareholders and holders of unsecured corporate bonds would not be protected by the regulators' plan. Also coming to us from Fox Business, the SVB Financial Group filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in a New York court after Silicon Valley Bank collapsed last week, upending the world of tech startups. The company said in a statement that SVB Securities and their capital funds are general partner entities are not included in the Chapter 11 filing and continue to operate in the ordinary course as the company explores strategic alternatives for the businesses. SVB Financial Group says it has approximately $2.2 billion of liquidity at the time of filing. Lord willing, Alex Newman will be with us on Crosstalk this Monday and examining that just a bit further. But also in financial news, the Biden administration received a $3 million wire transfer from a Chinese energy company and subsequent payments after President Joe Biden left the vice presidency in 2017. This story from Breitbart, that's telling us from the House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer, announced upon receiving suspicious activity reports from the Treasury this week. U.S. banks have flagged over 150 of these suspicious activity reports from Hunter and James Biden that included large amounts of money flagged for further review. According to a 2020 Senate report, SARs often contain evidence of potential criminal activities like money laundering and fraud. The Biden family had previously negotiated a deal with CEFC from which Joe Biden, the big guy, would receive a 10% equity stake in the joint venture with Hunter's former business partner, Tony Bobulinski. In 2017, Hunter earned $1 million legal retainer from the company's chairman. He also received a large diamond worth an estimated $80,000 in February 2017. The suspicious activity reports also show money paid to Hunter and James Biden for their work with a Ukrainian energy company. In April of 2014, Hunter joined the board of Burisma just 2 years before Joe Biden stated that he forced the firing of the prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, investigating Burisma. Despite Hunter's lack of experience in Ukraine or his lack of experience in the energy sector, he was paid $83,000 per month by the energy company, or $1 million per year, just weeks after his dad, Joe Biden, was announced point person on U.S. foreign policy toward Ukraine. Very interesting to see what's happening there. And Western Journal also reporting that Comer revealed on Thursday, yesterday, that President Joe Biden's former daughter-in-law, the wife of Beau Biden, Hallie Biden, received tens of thousands of dollars from a Chinese energy firm in 2017. From American Military News, a crowd of migrants estimated to be at least 1,000 strong attempted to rush a border crossing in El Paso, Texas on Sunday. The standoff halted traffic on the Paso del Norte Bridge for about 5 hours and saw riot gear clad agents with Customs and Border Protection block the crowds with barricades topped with barbed wire, El Paso Times reported. The incident comes as El Paso struggles under the weight of what it refers to as a years-long migrant crisis that recently saw a huge spike. The Border Patrol encounters with migrants in the El Paso area jumped 87.4% from August to December. Just the News is reporting that U.S. Border Patrol Chief Raul Ortiz told lawmakers on Wednesday that the U.S. Border Patrol does not have operational control of the border. It was a Homeland Security Committee field hearing in McAllen, Texas. By the way, it was boycotted by the Democratic congressman. But the House Committee on Homeland Security Chair Mark Green noted that the former definition of operational control, according to the U.S. law, is the prevention of all unlawful entries into the U.S., including entities and, entries by terrorists, other unlawful aliens, instruments of terrorism, narcotics, and other contraband. Well, when asked if the U.S. had operational control of the entire U.S.-Mexico border, Ortiz replied with the words, "No, sir." Let's just catch a little bit of that hearing that took place.
Chief Ortiz, does DHS have operational control of our entire border?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'd like to share it with the American people. This is the actual definition of operational control that is in the code, written into the code well before I came to Congress, the definition, and I appreciate the honesty of Chief Ortiz. Do you think that, let's play a video clip here. I just want to share this question.
Will you testify under oath right now? Do we have operational control, yes or no?
Yes, we do.
And we have operational control of the borders.
Yes, we do.
Chief Ortiz, do you think that Secretary Mayorkas is lying there?
Sir, when you talk about operational control, about 10 years ago, we used operational control as a measuring stick of our effectiveness along the southwest border. My new strategy is geared towards mission advantage.
So you know I'm asking a very specific question.
Yes, sir.
And you're kind of describing how the goalpost has been moved because of the mass waves of people that are coming. My question, you heard the secretary, he said we have operational control. That's the definition of operational control.
Based upon the definition you have, sir, up there, no.
We don't.
Isn't that interesting? No, we don't have operational control. And yet you heard embedded in there a video clip from Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security, who insisted before a congressional committee that we do have operational control. Ortiz was also asked if he supports reinstating the Remain in Mexico policy and extending Title 42 restrictions. And he said, "I support any policy that's going to allow us to repatriate individuals back to their home country," he said. Well, also, as the Daily Signal points out, Kinney County, Texas, under siege by illegal aliens and smugglers, Sheriff Brad Coe testified Wednesday during the House committee hearing. Let's hear what he had to say.
Currently, we're under siege by illegal aliens and smugglers coming through the county, trying to get to destinations within the United States. with the current open door policy, Kenny County has seen a dramatic increase in illegal alien activity. The number of migrants seen on game cameras that I currently have deployed throughout the state, thanks to DPS, averaging between 160 and 180 people per night that are going through the county unchallenged. That comes out to roughly 60,000 people enter through my county this year. These are also considered godwives by Kenny County because we don't have the resources to go out and track and try to apprehend these people walking through the county.
60,000 gotaways in 1 year from one county. One county, Kenny County, Texas. Again, that was Sheriff Brad Cole as he testified before the committee. The Washington Free Beacon tells us that asylum claim appointments for migrants apprehended at the southern border are booked through the year 2032. 2032 at Immigration and Customs Enforcement offices in New York City, according to an agency report reviewed by the New York Post. The appointment backlog means many migrants can remain in the U.S. for almost a decade before they face immigration court to argue their case. Hot Air is reporting as the Biden border crisis grinds onto its third year, residents along the southern border are growing increasingly frustrated, some cases frightened. That's particularly true in Texas, where legislators have decided to take matters now in their own hands. The state legislature is reportedly finalizing some new laws that would empower state law enforcement to take a much more active and aggressive role in securing the border and ensuring the safety of Texans living in the affected areas. The plan will potentially include an entirely new police force dedicated to blocking illegal migrants, according to the Lone Star State. The proposed legislation includes a term that we don't run across very often. Illegal crossing into Texas would become a, quote, state felony. That may seem like a contradiction in terms, but it's not. State felonies in Texas are laws that align with certain federal laws and can result in significant penalties. But because it's a state law, perpetrators are sent to not to federal prison, but to serve time in state jail. Migrants arrested under the new law could face up to 10 years in jail and a $10,000 fine for each offense. From One American News Network, the Texas Senate passed a bill Wednesday that would consider fentanyl poisoning as murder for reasons related to both prosecution and death certificates. The bill also makes possession of fentanyl with intent to deliver prosecutable under the statute that it would govern organized crime. The Daily Caller telling us that five students were hospitalized Wednesday afternoon after ingesting what California authorities believe to be marijuana gummies at a school in Sun Valley, according to the Los Angeles Fire Department. The incident on last Wednesday at the Sun Valley Magnet School, where eight kids showed symptoms of sudden illness after eating the gummies, that's according to the fire department. All kids between the kids that were there, ages 12 to 16, 12 to 16, were still conscious and breathing when help arrived. Five of them hospitalized. Other three got released to their respective families, officials had said. Well, friends, it happened again. Yes, another attack on the pro-life center, Compass Care in Buffalo. We'll tell you about it after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, president, author, and creation seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, was the ark big enough to carry all the animals that needed to be on board?
Most assuredly it was, Chris. The ark was even bigger than it needed to be. Carefully estimating how many different kinds of animals there were before the flood and the average size, we see that the ark was more than sufficient for the task. In fact, it probably could have carried many more animals. I suspect that it also could have carried many more humans, too. But they had all rejected God's offer to repent and get on board. They died in the flood, but there was room on board. Chris, we don't know all the details about the flood, but those that we do know fit very nicely into the Back to Genesis truth of creation and the flood.
If you'd like to go back to Genesis, you can find us on the web at www.icr.org. For the Institute for Creation Research, I'm Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America and a news roundup day here today on the broadcast. Yes, Compass Care. We just interviewed Jim Harden this past Monday. On Wednesday, this past Wednesday, at about 10:30 p.m., again at night, I guess that's why the FBI and Homeland Security just cannot catch them, Department of Justice, Compass Care, previously firebombed a Christian pro-life group in Buffalo, again attacked by pro-abortion Maoist Antifa, they report. There have been no arrests in the June 7th, 2022 arson attack on them that injured a couple of firefighters. But now their exterior sign defaced using the red letter graffiti in typical Antifa jeans revenge fashion. Red letters spelling out liars across their main sign for their business. Reverend Jim Harden, CEO, said this fits the definition of domestic terror. Those in the FBI and DOJ who refuse to treat it as such need to be fired and investigated. This is an act of intimidation and a violation of the FACE Act. America needs to return to a civilized order. Compass Care dignifies women with true choice, and there is nothing Antifa can do to make a stop. All people are made in the image of God and are equally valuable, both the mother and the child. The love of God triumphs over terror. Well, friends, there's just really a head scratcher going on in the state of Wisconsin right now. Yesterday, make that to Wednesday, the Assembly Speaker Robin Voss had a joint press conference to introduce legislation to expand abortion in Wisconsin. Right now, after the Dobbs decision took place, we found that Wisconsin had laws in the book that said no from 1849. I mean, the wisdom of those who organized the state and part of that early legislature said, no, we're not going to take the life of unborn children. Well, they are now, and except it was to save the life of a mother. Well, the proposed bill now would expand it now to cases of rape and incest as well. A press release from Wisconsin Family Action said they opposed this legislation. Jelaine Appling, president of Wisconsin Family Action, said the language describing the need for an abortion to save the life of a mother is totally unnecessary. The bill mentions three specific circumstances, all of which are either not pregnancies at all or they're already recognized as medically necessary to save the life of the mother. With regard to allowing for an abortion for cases of rape and incest, the termination of a viable pregnancy under any circumstance is a destruction of a human life. The child who's conceived under these circumstances is just as viable and valuable as any other child. He or she should not be destroyed because of the crime that was committed by her father. Rape or incest are tragic circumstances, to be sure, and the trauma to a woman is horrific. But abortion doesn't stop the trauma. It adds to it. Oh, folks, as I say, it's a head-scratcher. But Robin Voss, Speaker of the Wisconsin State Assembly, holding a press conference to expand abortion in the state. Certainly those of you in Wisconsin should be reaching out to your legislators with your viewpoint. LifeNews.com tells us Utah Governor Spencer Cox, he signed a pro-life bill into law Wednesday that protects unborn babies by ending abortion facility licenses throughout the state. Aborting unborn babies is still illegal in Utah due to a court order blocking its abortion ban, but the new law effectively could ban elective abortions while that lawsuit continues. LifeNews.com also telling us yet another abortion facility gone out of business. That's the American Family Planning in Pensacola has closed forever, the report, and now saying the city is abortion-free. The National Review reporting that a Russian military plane collided with a U.S. drone in international airspace over the Black Sea on Tuesday, prompting U.S. forces to land the unmanned aircraft in international waters. European Command confirmed that a Russian Su-27 aircraft struck the propeller of a U.S. MQ-9 drone that was on a routine mission in international airspace when two Russian jets attempted to intercept it. Several times before the collision, the Su-27s dumped fuel on and flew in front of the MQ-9 in a reckless, environmentally unsound and unprofessional manner, they report. The Russian jets' recklessness almost caused one of the fighter jets to crash. However, U.S. and allied aircraft continue to operate in international airspace. The U.S. has urged Russia to instruct its pilots to conduct themselves in an appropriate and not haphazard manner in the skies. Well, Breitbart is also reporting that the U.S. Reaper drone that crashed in the Black Sea Tuesday will be recovered and studied, a Russian spy chief claims, as the two countries tussle over how exactly the unmanned aircraft was brought down. Now, Russia says it will attempt to recover the drone from the deep international waters of the Black Sea near Russia-occupied Crimea to study the U.S. Air Force drone. Western Journal reporting a derailment Wednesday night in western Arizona involved a train that was initially reported as carrying hazardous materials by local media, but the story since changed. Evidently, it was carrying corn syrup, but the cause still under investigation. I believe there was yet another derailment that occurred this morning. Let's see, this coming from CNN. Ohio's Attorney General Dave Yost announced Tuesday he's filed a federal lawsuit against Norfolk Southern over last month's toxic chemical derailment in East Palestine. He outlined the 58-count complaint, saying the Norfolk Southern violated numerous state, federal, and Ohio common laws and violated the state's Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act. The attorney general went on to point out that the derailment caused the release of over 1 million gallons of hazardous chemicals, and it endangered both the health and area residents of Ohio's natural resources. They also reporting that the EPA Tuesday proposed the first national drinking water standard for forever chemicals that are dangerous to human health. Interesting story there. Not the Bee is telling us that the World Health Organization, well, they're at it again. They're warning that millions of people all over the world are dying from too much salt and that governments must implement mandatory sodium reduction. The government is to institute mandatory sodium reduction. Francisco Branca, the director of the WHO's Department of Nutrition for Health and Development, says that 1.8 million people per year are dying from too much sodium in their diet. That's 0.02% of the population of the planet, mind you. And in order to save them, we all need to give up salt. The goal was originally to get all the countries in the world to reined in on salt intake by 2025, but now they're considering extending the target to 2030. That's an interesting year. Haven't you heard of that 2030 agenda? Western Journal is reporting Nevada lawmakers are considering a remarkable shift in allowing the water agency that manages the Colorado River supply for Las Vegas to limit single-family residential use in the desert city and surrounding area. In another potential step in the decades-long effort to ensure one of the driest metropolitan areas in the U.S. has enough water, already in Las Vegas, ornamental lawns are banned, new swimming pools have a size limit, and the water used inside homes is recycled. While some agencies across the U.S. West, are tying increased water use to increase cost, Nevada could be the first to give a water agency, that's the Southern Nevada Water Authority, the power to restrict what comes out of your taps, the residents' taps, in state statute to about 30,000 gallons above the average use. Well, let's see what's going on again here with the Biden administration. Oh, yes, they've already come out against the gas stoves. Now they are looking at an attack against washing machines. The Biden administration, a report in the Washington Free Beacon documents the Biden campaign against washing machines. The mandates would force manufacturers to reduce cleaning performance to ensure their machines comply. Leading industry giants like Whirlpool said in public comments on the rule, they'll also make the appliances more expensive, laundry day a headache. Each cycle will take longer. The detergent will cost more. And in the end, the clothes will be less clean, the manufacturers say. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, they're not getting the clothes clean now. Over an hour to wash laundry at times. Little bit of water, little bit of soap, and the clothes are not coming clean, and it's going to get a whole lot worse. Breitbart is reporting that regulators in the San Francisco Bay Area voted Wednesday to eliminate the sale and installation of natural gas-powered furnaces and water heaters over 8 years beginning in 2027, supposedly to limit air pollution. The new policy does not affect gas stoves, but it follows a 2020 decision by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors to ban the installation of natural gas lines into new buildings. PJ Media, since we're on the environmental kick here, e-bike lithium-ion batteries. have already ignited 25 fires within New York City limits this year, killing at least two and injuring 36. According to officials, that was quadruple the number of fires sparked by these batteries over the same time frame last year. A video posted on Twitter by the New York City Fire Department shows the blazing speed at which a faulty battery can go up in flames and set off a massive fire. The conflagration ignited by this particular battery destroyed a grocery store where it was charging. It grew into a five-alarm blaze that also damaged nearby buildings and injured seven people. As of November 22nd of 2022, these fires triggered by poorly maintained or damaged lithium-ion batteries have caused 10 deaths and more than 200 injuries in the five boroughs alone in just the last 2 years, notes the city. The Daily Caller telling us the Biden administration formally approved Willow, that's an $8 billion oil drilling project located in Alaska, Monday morning over the objection of climate activists. But now the massive project operated by the energy company from ConocoPhillips is projected to produce some 600 million barrels of oil over a 30-year lifespan. In a bid to placate environmentalists, though, the administration has considered limiting the project to just two drill sites, down from the five that they had proposed. But the company and Alaska lawmakers warned that the project would need at least three to be economically viable. The administration also took steps to limit future oil and gas drilling in the Natural Petroleum Reserve of Alaska, where Willow is located, by designating more than 13 million of the 23 million acres as special areas. Special areas. Well, friends, we know that China is just chomping at the bit in building its military forces. We're going to hear some things going on with them. But you know what we're doing within our Air Force here? The United States, the good old Air Force. Fox News has a story this week. On Wednesday, the U.S. Air Force this month launched an effort to hire a handful of senior-level diversity, equity, and inclusion managers and is hoping to place these officials in post around the country from Washington, D.C. to Alaska. Now, keep in mind that we are falling far behind in meeting recruitment entries into our military. Our recruits are way, way down, below levels where they should be, but we're going to find the funds to have diversity, equity, and inclusion managers. Each post will pay between $82,000 per year, and the top position at the Pentagon could earn more than $180,000 per year. The Air Force has put out calls to hire four senior DEI officials since March 3rd. Looking for a supervisory diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility officer for Air Force headquarters in Arlington, Virginia. Could be paid up to $183,500. The person will serve as a first-level supervisor who will direct employees assigned to the Air Force Office of Diversity and Inclusion. The goal is to ensure that diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility education and training and strategic outreach and engagement complies with legal and regulatory requirements and meets customer needs. It also involves collecting statistics to deliver world-class diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility efforts for airmen and their families. Isn't that what the military is all about? Shame on us. We're heading in the wrong direction. We've got countries that are building their forces, building their capabilities, and we're more worried about DEI. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
Have you wanted to impact a life for Christ but didn't know how? Perhaps you felt you were too old. The Secrets of Jonathan Sperry is a 95-minute dramatic film depicting a 75-year-old man pouring himself into some 12-year-old boys, motivating them to read their Bible and follow Jesus. A second film, Play the Flute, presents another story, this time of a youth leader who takes over a teen group that is filled with apathy and finds himself in an uphill battle. These are both powerful films reminding the viewer to stick to your calling. Now through April the 10th, VCY America is making a pack available including The Secrets of Jonathan Sperry and Play the Flute, and a bonus copy of The Gospel of John, all for a donation of just $25. Call VCY at 1-800-729-9829.
It's a news roundup day here on Crosstalk, and yes, indeed, we have the Air Force, and folks, the other aspects of the military are being impacted by this, just so overcome by having a diversity, equity, and inclusion officer and building this all throughout the military. And we see the great ends that the Air Force is going to at this time. And we talk about what's happening in other places of the world. This is from the Gatestone Institute. It came out today. Their report, on March 10th, Chinese President and Communist Party General Secretary Xi Jinping brokered a surprise agreement between Saudi Arabia and Iran to reestablish diplomatic relations between the two countries, effectively knocking the U.S. off the Middle Eastern chessboard and showing itself as a power broker on the world stage. Xi is, in fact, on his way to Russia, possibly as soon as next week, with a 12-point peace plan, ostensibly to see if he can pull off the same wizardry with Ukraine, but more likely to nail down plans to seize Taiwan. China is the world's new power broker anywhere, especially in the Middle East, is conceivably a seismic turning point, possibly the beginning of China fulfilling its dream of replacing the U.S. as the dominant superpower in a new world order. For the Biden administration, this is a blow for what it has been. It has only itself to thank. But friends, this is the very thing that people like Alex Newman and Tom DeWeese have warned on Crosstalk. The New World Order is not really about the United States at all. No, it's communist China advancing, and we see that taking place. CBN News is reporting, according to the Pentagon, China is adding to its nuclear arsenal at a rate that could surpass the U.S. by the end of the decade. The number of land-based fixed and mobile ICBM launchers in China exceeds the number of ICBM launchers in the U.S. The commander of the U.S. Strategic Command, which oversees nuclear forces, wrote the Senate's and House Armed Services Committees. That was late January. While many of China's ICBMs remain empty, their strategic partnership with Russia is a concern. Russia is providing fuel for China's reactors that produce the nuclear material. These reactors produce plutonium, and plutonium is an important nuclear material that China needs for the nuclear buildup. U.S. intelligence officials predict that Beijing will soon be able to produce enough weapons-grade plutonium to increase its nuclear warhead stockpile as much as fourfold within the next 12 years. But you know what? We're going to have a diversity officer and equity and inclusion. Isn't that amazing? PJ Media is reporting General Chance Saltzman told U.S. senators that China is the most immediate threat to the United States, that is to be preparing for what could eventually be a large-scale sustained conflict, and that it has its sights set on outer space. Communist China seems especially devoted to creating the following: weapons of mass destruction, space missiles, nuclear launchers, electronic warfare jammers, lasers to disrupt satellite sensors, building spacecraft that are able to snag and move our outer space platforms and move them out of position. According to General Saltzman, Biden's Beijing benefactors currently have 347 satellites actively gathering intelligence on the U.S. I wonder if they're seeing our training program for DEI. CNN is reporting the International Criminal Court has issued arrest warrants for Russian President Vladimir Putin and Maria Lvova-Belova. This is a member of Putin's government and announced in a news release today. Lvova-Belova is the official at the center of the alleged scheme to forcibly deport thousands of Ukrainian children to Russia. The ICC said that both Putin and Lvova-Belova are allegedly responsible for the war crime of unlawful deportation of population, that's children, and that of unlawful transfer of population, children, from occupied areas of Ukraine to the Russian Federation. Also coming from CNN, they're reporting a lot of these world news. Poland is set to provide Ukraine with four MiG-29, that's MiG-29 fighter jets in the coming days. That's by the Polish President Duda said on Thursday. That's according to the first NATO country to do so. National Review is reporting that Chinese companies, including one with direct ties to Beijing, are routing rifles, body armor, and drone equipment to Russia via the Middle East. A Thursday report by Politico, reviewing customs data by the Import Genius, revealed that the shipments took place between June and December of 22. NATO ally Turkey and the United Arab Emirates are the countries that the shipments were routed through. Baptist Press is reporting that Russia has amplified its persecution of Christians, Muslims, and Jews in its war in Ukraine, destroying churches and murdering, torturing, and imprisoning many pastors and advocates. Participants in a U.S. government hearing said on March the 15th. They reported that Russia murdered at least 26 religious leaders, tortured others, and imprisoned many, and heavily damaged or destroyed at least 500 churches and other religious places of worship. The American Military News reporting that Iran has unveiled its new warship as they get closer to nukes, a 240-meter-long warship in Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. The warship has the capability to transport helicopters, drones, sea-to-sea and sea-to-surface missile systems, and is equipped with advanced technology, including 3D radars and communication systems. This from Newsmax. There will be dire consequences for North Korea leader Kim Jong-un's regime if any nuclear weapons are used against the U.S. or its allies, said Brigadier General Pat Ryder. He said, I think we've been very clear that were North Korea to employ a nuclear weapon, it would be the end of the North Korean regime. His comments came after Pyongyang enacted a new law saying that it will allow the preemptive use of nuclear weapons. Friends, things are happening worldwide. Let's get back here to the states. From townhall.com, Sarah Arnold reports that New York City's police department is struggling to recruit new officers amid an ongoing crime wave through the Democrat-run state. According to a report, NYPD officers are resigning at a record-breaking rate, with 239 officers leaving in January and February, a 36% increase from the 176 who resigned in the same period last year, and a shocking 117% hike from the 110 in 2021. Police Benevolent Association President Patrick Lynch said the NYPD staffing emergency is approaching the point of no return. The point of no return. They say they have barely enough personnel to meet the minimal required to safely answer 911 calls. American Military News tells us a crew of teens has stolen over $40,000 in calculators from Bronx High School and a burglary spree that has spanned more than a month. The teens, described as being ages 15 to 18, have also damaged at least $15,000 worth of property in the nine incidents. So what do we do? Okay, new executive orders, a decree from Joseph Biden, the executive order on reducing gun violence and making our communities safer, ordering officers of the federal government to undertake efforts to restrict Americans' natural right to keep and bear arms in his decree. I wonder if the bad guys are going to know this. I wonder if those who are obtaining weapons under unlawful means are going to abide by this. In his decree, Biden orders his underlings to disarm the people using the following language taken directly from the executive order. This is on thenewamerican.com. The Secretary of Defense, in consultation with the Attorney General and Secretary of Homeland Security, shall develop and implement principles to further firearm and public safety practices throughout the Department of Defense acquisition of firearms consistent with applicable law. Next, per the executive order issued by the White House on March 14th, the Secretary of Defense, the Attorney General, the Secretary of Homeland Security, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and the Secretary of Education shall undertake efforts to encourage effective use of extreme risk protection orders. That's red flag laws, folks. Additionally, those same federal bureaucrats shall, per the Biden decree, expand existing federal campaigns and other efforts to promote safe storage of firearms. It goes on to mandate that the federal bureaucracy expand the waiting period for the purchase of weapons and that the marketing of firearms be put under the watchful eye of the Federal Trade Commission and innumerable constitutional violations within this. We understand that Washington Examiner tells gun rights groups are already threatening litigation against this. Patrick Parsons, executive vice president of the American Firearms Association, said that they will fight to overturn these tyrannical, unconstitutional dictates at the state and federal levels, as well as in the courts. Hot Air is reporting that the Supreme Court, well, they're requesting more funding. Why? To protect the justices. It's not being done by the Department of Justice. It is against the law to protest outside the home of a Supreme Court justice. And the DOJ is not upholding the law. They said we need more money to protect the justices. Christian Post reporting months after winning the U.S. Supreme Court case, Joe Kennedy, a public high school assistant football coach in Washington State, who was dismissed for praying on the field after games, well, he has been finally reinstated. Liberty Counsel reporting that they have filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the District of Rhode Island against Providence Public School District and its superintendent, Dr. Javier Montanez, for discriminating against Child Evangelism Fellowship by not allowing its Good News clubs on campuses while allowing other clubs to meet. Liberty Counsel seeks preliminary and permanent injunctions against the school district enforcement of what they call the unconstitutional policies that prohibit the Good News clubs to meet. You see, there's a number of groups that are meeting at the school using the facilities free. Boys and Girls Clubs, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, YMCA, Girls on the Run. They're given free use of school facilities for after-school programs, but they're saying no to CEF. A story here from LifeSiteNews.com. A Connecticut church is suing the state on religious liberty grounds for attempting to force it to subject religious school students to vaccination requirements. Fox News reported that the dispute concerns changes Connecticut made in 2021 to its immunization requirements for participation in public and private schools, as well as daycare and other childhood centers, by eliminating the ability to obtain religious exemptions, leaving medical exemptions the only possible avenue to avoid objectionable injections. Milford Christian Church, that maintains a pre-kindergarten program called Little Eagles and a K-12 academy, has refused to comply, and as a result, they're given a choice between compelling their students to vaccinate, expelling them if they don't, or facing the forcible state closure. In response, it's suing Connecticut and related offices on First Amendment grounds. By the way, Epoch Times has quite a story here. Doctors increasingly around the world are saying it's time to stop the shots. Dr. Eli David saying Fauci was wrong about lockdowns, about masks, double masks, remdesivir, vaccine, boosters, and virus origin. Was Fauci right about anything, he asked? Give me a single thing about COVID which Fauci got right. As of February 24th, nearly 34,580 deaths have been reported to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention via the government's Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. The mounting evidence that COVID-19 vaccine is doing more harm than good. Doctors and health experts around the world, many of whom are risking losing their jobs, are now speaking out against giving in to the mRNA injections. Also, folks, at the same time, LifeSiteNews.com has a story, came out yesterday. The FDA, U.S. Food and Drug Administration, is approving booster doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 shot for children as young as 6 months based on a trial of just 24 patients. The FDA announced March 14th its amendment, its emergency use authorization for the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine bivalent to allow a single booster dose for children between 6 months and 4 years, at least 2 months after being initially vaccinated. And by the way, a story at the Vaccine Reaction reported about the Guillain-Barré syndrome is being linked to the RSV vaccine. I don't have time to get into that more here, but want you to be aware of that. And Children's Health Defense said lawsuits are piling up alleging that remdesivir has been killing COVID patients. Kidney failure, the attack on its organs. Friends, let's open our phone lines. Maybe you want to comment on these or other current event stories. Our number, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Now we have 20 banks that are reportedly in trouble as the contagion of the first Silicon Bank failure starts to spread. My friends, we've been talking for years about money and a biblical worldview. The Bible has an awful lot to say about wealth and money. Money is not the root of all evil. It's the love of money. Money can be used, well, for good or for evil. That's why it's important to apply a biblical worldview to this topic. Americans are about to get a real education on how our economic system in America works. It's not working as it should, biblically or constitutionally. President of the United States, Andrew Jackson, in his farewell address, warned Americans of the dangers of fractional reserve banking and a central bank. Now, we have consequences from the Federal Reserve and fractional reserve banking. Ideas, well, they have consequences.
Well, there's been some breaking news issues going on, and it appears, here's NBC News reporting, the federal law enforcement preparing for a mass chaos in New York City with a possible indictment of former President Trump. Five senior officials told the outlet local, state, and federal agencies are anticipating the possibility that Trump could be indicted as early as next week. Taking your calls here today on Crosstalk, our number 800-733-9829. Let's begin with Fred calling in from, Milwaukee. You're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to mention that even though the abortion clinics are closing, the United States male abortions are increasing dramatically. And also, why isn't anyone talking about President Barack Hussein Obama, which is translates to bless, accept King Lightning, but his paperwork, his presidential paperwork, nobody's going after anything he may have hidden all over the country and in the world.
Okay. Thank you, Fred, for your comments here. We've got Alice next in Arkansas. Alice, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. I want to talk about the banking situation. But Jesus has told us we're not to take thought for what we would need for tomorrow. God wants to take care of his people. In fact, he said, my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. But what I want to see more than anything is the spiritual need of everybody, of people in America, as I'm hearing the horrible sinfulness that's going on in this country. Talk about protection. I've got the answer. If God be for us, who can be against us? Mm-hmm. And now I'd like to say one more thing. If I may have the liberty, today my son Kurt would be 45 years old. But God took him home because of lung cancer. I mentioned it before. Mm-hmm. But I want to give you his testimony again. Please pass it on, people. My 44-year-old son, his last words to me were, Mom, I'm in the center of God's will. I have surrendered all. Well, that's what the lost need to do to repent. But also we all need to be in the center of God's will and surrender all to him. Then we can have the perfect love, joy, and peace this troubled world so desperately needs.
Amen. God bless you, Alice. Thank you for calling today. And certainly our condolences continue with you as well. And what a testimony that your son left behind. Thank you. Let's go to John in Vyborg, South Dakota. John, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hello. I wanted to comment about the remdesivir you mentioned. Some time ago, there was an article where France did an experiment on it, and five of their people they did an experiment on, one died, two needed transplants of the kidney and or liver, and the other ones were severely injured because of it, and they decided remdesivir was too dangerous, and yet Fauci bought stockpiles of it and forced it on the American people. And then they talk about the vaccine, and people got to wonder if Pfizer's CEO and other top people are not taking this vaccine, why are they forcing it on the rest of us? And that's my comment.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Thank you for the call. Let's see. Rosa in Racine, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that when this whole thing first started in 2020, I went to the Reawaken America tour in Tulsa. The frontline doctors explained what was in the vaccine, what remdesivir does, so I knew in the very beginning. God works in and through people. It's our responsibility, yes, to pray, but we have to act, and we have to do things, and we have to say things, no matter how painful they may be. Remdesivir kills a person within 10 days. Most of them died in 9. And the vaccine, well, that wasn't for us either. It's a death shot, but there are antidotes and there are things the church can do or people that have had the shot can do. We're not dead in the water, so to speak. But we have to possess the land, occupy. That means we should be in charge. We should be in charge of the school system. We should be in charge of government like King David was. So we kind of need to wake up. That's my comment.
Thank you very much. Indeed, we do need to wake up. Barry in Tennessee, you're on the air.
Yeah, so just a synopsis on the whole thing pretty much, Jim, is just that, the rapture could happen pretty much at any time. And, people are thinking that that's a thing is God's going to use just to escape you so you don't ever have to go through things. But, we may have to go through more than what we may want to, but one thing for sure, we are sure to go through a little wrath of man's wrath, but those that are born again will never have to go through any of God's wrath.
Mm. Thank you for that. And I am reminded the scripture says, in this world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, Barry.
Sure.
Michelle in Ohio, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Jim. Just wanted to make a comment, a friendly reminder about the Remdesivir and the company name for which it is housed under through the Bill Gates Foundation, and that name being Gilead. That's the company holding that right to the Remdesivir. And if we all know and remember the bomb of Gilead, you can't fake God. You can't try to uprise on God. You can't supersede God. And you can deny God all that you want, but in the end, he wins. And I believe Bill Gates understands that. Think about that. He named that company Gilead.
Well, okay, thank you for your thoughts on that. But I'm not sure how much Bill Gates really adheres to faith in God, especially as we have seen his statements as it relates to population control, which is direct opposition of what Scripture says to be fruitful and multiply, to fill the earth. And he's come across with a very different take on that as well. We're out of time here today on the program. We want to thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today and all this week. And friends, just a reminder that indeed these are tough times, but let's be faithful. Let's be faithful in being the salt and being light that God has called us to be in times like these. And certainly share the good news of the gospel with others. So critically important. And with it being Friday today, we know the Lord's Day is coming. And I encourage you often to be in a Bible-believing, Bible-teaching local church, a church that upholds the authority of God's Word. Friends, it's sure, it's steadfast, it is truth. God bless you. Thanks for joining us here on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.